Chapter 36. Rouge. The transition back to the battlefield outside Bright was so abrupt that Rouge swayed dizzily, catching herself against Codswallop's fluffy side. She stared around, looking for Aspen, and quickly located him. He was making a beeline for the gate into refuge, and Rouge jogged after him, trailed by her confused ostrich. There was no way she was going to miss his reunion with Sarave, especially now that he didn't have Bree riding around in his head anymore. As soon as Aspen's feet touched bluestones, he lit up like a 4th of July fountain. Sparks flew, multicolored lights flickered, and he briefly vanished from sight in a haze of light. When he reappeared, he looked completely different. The ragged clothes were gone, replaced with a tidy, high-quality jerkin of buttery leather over a deep blue linen shirt. His pants were also leather but dyed a rich black, and hugged his body as if they were tailored just for him. He was also clean. Not just cleansed of his crust of dirt, blood, and sweat, but manicured and groomed within an inch of his life. The biggest change, however, was the slender silver circlet that sat on his head in place of his battered felt hat. He froze, holding up his arms to stare at the smooth, perfectly rounded fingernails, and then reaching up to trace the metal crown on his head. "What?" he managed, but Sarave interrupted him. The little goblin queen drew herself up to her full height of maybe 4 feet, and gave Aspen a glare filled with worry, anger, frustration, insecurity, and love. "Aspen Huwe, I have been waiting for you." Aspen looked absolutely confounded. "What did you do, Sarave?" Sarave's thin lips tightened. "What I should have done as soon as you convinced me to accept your city seed. A goblin Tahui may select any male as her Huwe, and that male will be privileged to accept the role. I have selected you, and you may not decline." She stared at Aspen, as if daring him to say something. Aspen hesitated, and then the biggest grin Rouge had ever seen stretched across his face. He fell to his knees on the bluestones and leaned forward to rest his forehead against Sarave's. Their crowns clinked together, and the queen's lean arms reached out tentatively to wrap around his neck. "Saravale Hui, I gladly accept the cage you offer me, so long as I may share it with you," he murmured, and Rouge had to look away from the expressions on their faces. A moment later, Silas flapped free of the newlyweds. The little bat landed on Rouge's shoulder and began grooming herself, in spite of the fact that she too was so clean that even Sumi wouldn't be able to find fault. A silver glint in the fur between her big ears turned out to be a delicate silver ring that the little bat was unable to remove. "What is this?" Silas asked plaintively, prying at it with her wing thumbs. Rouge poked at it cautiously. "I think it's a crown." Silas gave up and collapsed flat on her back, draped over Rouge's shoulder. "Why do I have a crown?" Stifling a giggle, Rouge said, "I think you may be a princess now." Silas' squeak was so piercing that Rouge got a deafened debuff for 3 minutes. Rouge sat on her bed in Aspen's small house, staring at the pulsing 39 next to her notifications list. She had set up filters to clear out all of the miscellaneous messages about attacks, damage, buffs, debuffs, and myriad notices about defeating or assisting in defeating all of the monsters and players she and her party had slain. Over 500 messages had been purged, and now there were only these few left, but she had a feeling they would be more than enough. Drawing in a deep, calming breath, she mentally tapped the icon. "Hear ye, the war between the Goblin Nation and Quarternell has ended. The City of Refuge has successfully defended itself and maintained its independent status. The relationship between citizens of the two nations has returned to neutral until diplomatic relations can be restored. Players who fought on the side of the Forces of Light gain a 10% boost to experience gain for the next 24 hours of playtime. Players who fought on the side of the Forces of Darkness will have their experience gain reduced 10% for the next 24 hours of playtime."
Hear ye. A regime change has occurred in Quarternell. King Chester has perished, and the highest-ranking noble remaining will take his place. All hail King Jarl. Huzzah! Secret quest, Who Run the World, completed. You have defeated Apophis's champions and kept the world safe from those who would reduce it to a place of strife and suffering. Success, level 100 or 15 levels, whichever is greater. 1,000,000 gold. Become a Saintess of Gina. Congratulations. You are now level 100. Warning, you have more than 50 available stat points. Please allocate these points as soon as possible. Congratulations! You are now level 101. Warning, you have more than 50 available stat points. Please allocate these points as soon as possible. Congratulations! You are now level 102. Warning, you have more than 50 available stat points. Please allocate these points as soon as possible. Congratulations! You are now level 103. Warning! She was level 117. 117. Last time she checked, she was sitting at almost level 59, so that was almost 58 levels. In one day. She swallowed hard and kept reading. Congratulations! Your patron goddess Gina has recognized your unique service. You are now a foul trickster saintess. You may select three of the following class-specific skills. No experience can be gained in these skills, and they can only be increased through further service to your chosen deity. Heal, gain a heal spell equivalent to that of a level 40 cleric. Requires physical contact. Avian flight, even ostriches dream of flying. For one ostrich, that dream may come true. Allows up to 15 minutes of flight per day while riding Battle Mount Codswallop. Improved avian appeal, if it has wings and feathers, it counts. All avians will adore you on sight, even if they would otherwise attack you. Unaffiliated avians may assist you in battle, or rarely, bring you gifts or lead you to a hidden place or object. Warning! If you attack an avian, you gain the traitor debuff, which reduces your relationship with all non-sapient beings by 2 levels for 24 hours. Strength of life, when triggered, sap 10% of the strength of all living creatures within 10 feet. Their lost strength becomes yours for 10 minutes, even if they leave your area of influence. Weapon proficiency, gain proficiency with all weapons equivalent to that of a level 40 weapon master. Profligate poisoner, you have spent so much time working with your favored poison, dwarven kombucha, that you can now produce it at will. Any weapon or item you wish will automatically be poisoned, and attackers have a small chance to be poisoned simply by touching you. Warning, dwarves will only gain the intoxication debuff from this poison. Pilfer promotion, you have an automatic 75% chance of gaining a random item from any dead or unconscious mob NPC player within an 8-foot radius. You're gonna need a bigger bag. Rouge's face threatened to split from her grin, but she waved the list of options away. She'd definitely have to think about that. Well, avian flight was a definite, but the second choice was going to be much more difficult. Next was a minor flood of skill ups, even though she'd managed to convince them to add up the total increase for each skill since the last time she'd checked. Your examine skill has increased by 5. It is now level 17. Your stealth skill has increased by 2. It is now level 27. Your sneak skill has increased by 1. It is now level 23. Your pilfer skill has increased by 3. It is now level 10. The area of effect has expanded to 6 feet. Your acrobatics skill has increased by 8. It is now level 31. You are now at the intermediate level. Your poison mastery skill has increased by 2. It is now level 12. Your ostrich riding skill has increased by 8. It is now level 24. Mount Codswallop now has 9 damage points. Your knife wielding skill has increased by 5. It is now level 28. Your dual knife wielding skill has increased by 2. It is now level 12. Your tracking skill has increased by 1. It is now level 6. Your cold resistance skill has increased by 7. It is now level 11. Your Tarion puncture skill has increased by 1. It is now level 7. Your aerial acrobatics skill has increased by 1. It is now level 4. Your shadow glide skill has increased by 6. It is now level 16. Your poof spell has increased by 1. It is now level 21. Your repeat spell has increased by 1. It is now level 7. Your what's that? Spell has increased by 3. It is now level 8. Nice. That put acrobatics and stealth at the intermediate level, extending the time she could use them while reducing the stamina cost. Several other skills were getting close, but she really needed to focus on her spells. Reducing the mana cost and possibly the cooldown time of her favorite spells would be really helpful. Rouge leaned back against the wall beside the bed and grinned. She'd nixed all of the loot notices, so she only had a general idea what she'd picked up, but the fact that Pilfer had risen meant that it had triggered several times. It made sense, since she'd certainly been around lots of dead and unconscious people and creatures today. So even the 3.5% chance it had had at level 7 was bound to go off once or twice. Pilfer was one of those rare skills that was difficult to increase at lower levels, and then got easier as it increased, though it capped out at a maximum 10% chance. Unless, of course, she decided to take Pilfer promotion, a concept which made her nearly giddy with possibilities. The items it picked up were usually the rarest items in the person or mob's inventory. While that meant she had an excellent chance of acquiring worthless, unique items like someone's hand-sewn underwear or a lock of a lover's hair, they could also lead to fun quests, such as returning the hair to its donor, along with news of its owner's passing. Though, of course, it was usually best not to mention it, if you were the reason for said passing. Rolling her head to the side, Rouge looked at the little bat sleeping peacefully in the open cabinet beside the bed. Now that Silas, as Aspen's adoptive daughter, was a princess, she was fluffier and shinier than ever. Her tiny, fox-like face, surrounded by rich copper and silver fur, was just about the cutest thing Rouge had ever seen, and all she wanted to do was scoop up her sweet little friend and snuggle her until they both fell asleep. Sadly, sleep was only to be found out of the game, and Rouge had to log off and deal with whatever was going on in the real world. Sleepily, she wondered if the gamer news sites and streaming vids had already completed their coverage of the huge battle outside Refuge. She kind of wanted to see what had happened while she and the others had been tracking down Akuji, but she supposed the videos would still be available tomorrow. Sighing softly, she allowed the big red logout button to fill her vision. Usually, she just used the little one tucked away on her display, but today really called for the full-on button. Rouge took one more look around at the small stone-walled room and smiled. It was good to know that her friends and her city were finally safe, and next time she logged in, she could just run around, making friends and taking tea to old ladies or playing with unicorns. Oh yes, life was good. Reaching out, she pushed the button. The first thing Zoe heard when she blinked open her eyes was her screen pinging for her attention. It was muffled but audible even through the pod walls, and she sat up, slicking blue goo off her headset and the cap covering her hair. She grimaced at her wet fingers and said, "Allie, read my notifications, please." A smooth female voice replied promptly. "Of course, Zoe." Her home system continued in the same beautifully modulated tone, which only added to the surreal feeling that came over the girl as she listened. "Oh, Rouge, it's about time you woke up. I see you managed to beat Akuji, but that's okay, because I realized something very important. It doesn't actually matter what happens in the game, because in real life, I've already won. I just wanted to let you know, because you're about to be the only person in the world who will ever be able to appreciate my genius, and the best part is, no one will ever believe you. Feel free to call the police, little thief, because I have proof that you're the one who stole the information about the coma protocols. Do try though, because I want to see the look on your face when they take poor little orphan Zoe away. I wonder if Lily will bother to come to the funeral? Or maybe your trial?" There was a pause, and then Allie said, "Would you like to hear the next message, Zoe?" Throat dry, Zoe managed to croak out, "Yes," and the program continued. "Say bye-bye, Zoe." "No, Zoe baby, it's okay. Call the police, baby. I love you." End of messages. "Would you like to reply to sender?" Frantically, Zoe scrambled from the pod, slipping and nearly falling in her haste. "Yes. Yes. Call him back." "Calling saved contact dad." One heartbeat. Two. As Zoe knelt in the darkened room, shuddering, barely able to force her lungs to continue to inhale and exhale. "There is no reply." "Would you like to leave a message?" "Yes," Zoe sobbed, pulling herself to her feet. She grabbed for the screen, but it slithered from her fingers and tumbled to the floor. Why was it so hot? She smelled something like burning hair and plastic, and the carpet beneath the fallen device began to smoke, then melt. The screen flared into brilliant flame, fizzing and popping, until Zoe frantically reached into the pod and scooped out some of the draining blue goop and threw it on the small fierce blaze, extinguishing it. Zoe, I have detected smoke. Should I contact the fire department? Zoe's head was whirling as she stared at the slagged remnants of her screen. The rapidly cooling black and silver pool reminded her of the remnants of the filigree box in which Akuji's soul stone had been stored. No, she said hoarsely. It's out. Did you save the messages? They were read-only, Zoe. I'm sorry, but your screen is no longer in my list of available devices. You may need to charge or restart it if... No. Just be quiet for a minute. Zoe reached out a shaking finger. Those last words, had they really been from her dad? Or had Philip just made it up? She had no doubt the horrible messages had come from him, even if he'd managed to make it look like they came from her dad, who was probably sitting with Bridget in some hospital room with his screen off right now. Right? There was no way skinny, creepy, annoying Philip had managed to take down Zoe's big, strong, trained in martial arts father. Right? No way. She found herself muttering out loud as she stumbled through the house. Dimmed lights came on as she moved, illuminating her path enough to keep her from running into anything, but not enough to fully wake a sleeper who had just gotten up to go to the bathroom or get a drink of water. Her feet slipped as she stepped onto the cold bathroom tiles, and she would have gone down hard if she hadn't had her boosted agility. She stilled as she reached for the shower faucet. She was super strong and super agile. Hadn't she just been thinking that she was practically a grade B superhero? What if Philip had been using a pod just like hers? What if his was better? After all, Dr. Joe and Dr. Veralt were supposed to be competing to see whose prototype was better. As much as she liked Dr. Joe, that didn't make his pod the winner. What if Philip was running around as a grade A villain? Zoe gasped as a shock of cold water streamed over her body. She peeled her bodysuit off with shaking fingers and stood there, naked under the freezing needles of water. If Philip's physical abilities had improved as much as hers had, she had to admit that her dad probably wouldn't have much of a chance against him. Sure, Dad was probably better trained, but Zoe had noticed that some of her in-game skills also seemed to be carrying over in some form of muscle memory, and Phantom Hat wasn't the highest-ranked assassin in Veritas Online for nothing. Shivering, she turned off the water and climbed out of the shower. Her mind felt a little clearer, but she was no less terrified. Allie, call Dad again. Keep trying until he answers. Of course, Zoe. Zoe jogged through the house to her room. Max, who had been sleeping in his usual place at the foot of her bed, looked up as she entered. As if sensing her distress, the dog whined and got up to come push his nose into her cold hand. She knelt on the floor and hugged him tightly, ignoring the fur that stuck to her wet skin and the rising scent of damp dog. Is Dad here, Max? I bet he's in his bed, and that jackass is just messing with me. She pulled on a black tank top, then grabbed a pair of dark purple leggings from her drawer and tugged them on as well. Grimacing, she muttered, "Underwear is for sissies and people who aren't afraid their dad is," she choked, and clutched at Max's thick ruff as they crossed the 20 feet to Marcus's door. She didn't even bother knocking, but threw open the door and slapped the light plate on the wall. The bed was empty, and her dad's pod stood open against the right wall. His bodysuit was draped over the bed, and a hanger stuck out at an angle from the middle of a row of neatly hung navy, brown, and black shirts. Zoe picked up the bodysuit and stared at it. Her dad always got after her if she didn't put her suit into the cleansing bin as soon as she took it off, and she'd never seen his anywhere except in the clear acrylic tub built into the side of his pod. It looked like he'd gotten dressed and left in a hurry, but where exactly did he go? Allie, what was the last location of Dad's screen? Your father's screen was deactivated 6 minutes before he left home at 12:13 a.m., Zoe. Her gaze flew to the anachronistic alarm clock sitting beside the bed. Most people use their screens as both clocks and alarms, but her dad insisted on having a backup, and she was grateful for it now. The bright red numbers read 152. That meant he had been gone for over an hour and a half. She closed her eyes, desperately trying to think. She knew her dad had been going to meet Bridget. Bridget was going to talk to Harkness Landon and, no doubt, Bree. Harkness and Bree were in long-term immersion pods in the lab at Veritas Corp HQ. Zoe was no longer employed by Veritas, so she had no way to get inside, but she had friends who did. Allie, call Nina. Keep calling until she answers. It took a few minutes, during which she put on her sneakers and Max's harness. If she was going to break the rules, and possibly a few laws, she wasn't going in without backup. Max was the sweetest dog alive, but when he was about a year old, her dad had signed them all up for a guard dog training course. Every now and then, one of them thought to run the dog through his paces, and the smart canine still remembered all the commands. Nina's sleepy voice sounded concerned. Zoe? What's going on? I thought things were all over in. I need to get into Veritas HQ, Nina, Zoe said. My dad and Bridget went to meet Bridget's mom and Hank Landon, and I think something is really wrong. Dad's not answering his screen and... Oh, hold on, Zoe, Nina said. The older girl's voice sounded clearer now, but there was a second, quieter voice in the background. What do you mean they went to meet Bridget's mom? At Veritas? And Harkness Landon? I thought they broke up? Why would they be meeting them at Veritas, after midnight on a Sunday? It was as if a plug had been pulled, and all the secrets Zoe had been keeping poured out of her like water from a bathtub. The secret quest, Bree Stevenson, the immersion pods, Philip and Harris and Georgia McKean. By the time she was done, she could practically hear her friend's conspiracy theory-loving brain going off the rails and crashing into a very deep ravine. Zoe, are you sure? This was a new voice, but Zoe was almost certain it belonged to Sam. You didn't just have a crazy dream? I'm sorry, but this kind of sounds like you watched too many episodes of Grimes and Unishman before eating a loaded taco plate and then went to bed. No. Zoe was practically screaming at the ceiling and realized that she could actually hear the hysteria in her own voice. She took several long shaky breaths and wrapped her arms around herself as she went on. I know it sounds crazy, but I swear it's all true. Please, I just need to find my dad. Can you at least check the logs and see if he's there? She could hear shuffling noises and the sound of fabric rustling, and then Sam said, "Okay, Zoe. Hang on, let me log in." It was Nina's turn, and as Sam did whatever they needed to do, Zoe's friend said, "Zoe, I'm sure your dad is fine. He's super tough and smart, right? No way some lab geek could even touch him. Plus, even if he's with Bridget, I'm sure they're not." Sam broke in, sounding surprised. "There it is. Bridget Anderson. It's her first entry in over a week. She had a guest," another pause, "one Dr. Marcus Williams. No sign-out time listed. They're still there." There were some more noises, and conversation too low for Zoe to make out. Nina spoke again. "Look, Zoe, we can tell you're really freaked out. I'm sure Marcus is just helping Bridget with something very, very suspicious, but you know, legit, because they're both adults. I mean, the age gap is pretty big, but..." It was Sam's turn to speak, sounding bemused. "Zoe, I don't want you to panic, all right? I know the night guy pretty well, and I sent him a message to go check on Dr. Anderson and Dr. Williams. He won't tell us if they're, what they're doing anyway, but he can at least reassure us that they're safe. I'll ping you as soon as we know anything, but I get that you need to see your dad yourself. If you can meet me at Veritas in about half an hour, I'll make sure your dad comes down to give you a hug, and maybe you can get signed in as a guest too, and join them if they're, you know, talking to Dr. Anderson's mom." For the first time, Zoe really understood what Nina saw in Sam. Most people would have dismissed Zoe's story as the wild imagination of a kid. Zoe was sure that Sam took Nina's crazy conspiracy theories just as seriously, and applied logic and evidence to them as well. "Yes, thanks, Sam. That's... thank you. Oh. Wait," she slapped her pocket, feeling for a screen that wasn't there. "Philip fried my screen somehow. Nina? Yes. I'm going to call Jackie. You remember I told you about him? Allie, send Nina the contact card for Jackie Chan. Done, Zoe, came the app's quiet assurance. Jackie said I could call him for a ride anytime. Though she was pretty sure he hadn't meant 2 o'clock in the morning, but whatever. You can message him to reach me if Sam's friend gets back to you. I'm going to Veritas, one way or the other, though. I've got it, Zoe. Nina sounded far too chipper. Zoe knew the other girl had to be incredibly excited about the pile of conspiracies in which she'd just found herself. Nina seemed to catch herself, however, and her next words were much more serious. I'm sure your dad is just fine, Zoe. Though you're going to owe me a full explanation as soon as you see him. Zoe managed a half-sob, half-laugh, filled with relief that she had someone on her side. Sure, Nina. Whatever you want. Thanks. You too, Sam. Sam's voice was a little distant, probably across the room as they got dressed. No worries, Zoe. It's my job to keep everyone safe. Okay. I'm going to call Jackie now. They all rang off and Zoe said, Allie, call Jackie. Keep calling until H. Hey Z, what's up? The rideshare driver sounded far too wide awake for so early in the morning. Jackie. I need a ride.